So we are reading from the 10th chapter on page 445 of the Bhagavad Gita. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Bhuya Eva Mahabaho. Okay, is there on that page? Okay, right. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Bhuya Eva Mahabaho Shrunume Paramam Vachaha Yatteham Priyamanaya Vakshami Hitakamyaya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Listen, O mighty armed Arjuna, because you are my dear friend, for your benefit I shall speak to you further, giving knowledge that's better than what I have explained." So here in this verse, Krishna says, why better than what I have explained is that I am giving you knowledge about my opulences, my direct opulences, because of which, knowing me, then you will be fixed in my devotion. Krishna says in the 9th chapter, last verse, Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuro. But always think of me, how can I think of Krishna? Krishna is giving the practical example of his opulences so that one can always think about Krishna. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains a little bit about Bhagavan and a brief gist of what this chapter is all about. Text 2. From 2nd to, I think, 8 verses, Krishna says how difficult it is to actually know him. And we'll go step by step on what Krishna means by that. Second text is, Name vidu surugana prabhavam na maharshaya aham adir hi devanam maharshi naam cha sarvashah. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and the sages. Here Krishna confirms that from me all of them come, and so they do not know. The question might, one might say, you know what, you're right, demigods won't know you. Why? Because they are steeped in sense gratification. They have their power, their prestige, their opulences to deal with. Of course they won't know you. How can they know you? But in the next verse itself, Krishna says, not only the demigods, but even those great sages who are completely detached from sense gratification, who have nothing to do with material activities, they also do not know me. Neither the hosts nor the demigods. This is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur saying why Krishna says the demigods and the sages. And each purport of Prabhupada brings out finer and finer points on what Krishna is trying to say here. And every purport is worth reading and just enjoying it. The next verse, Krishna says, Yomam, third text, Yomam ajam anadim cha veti loka maheshwaram asamuda samartyeshu sarva papai pramuchyate. He who knows me as unborn, the beginningless and the supreme of all the worlds, only he, undiluted among men, is freed from all the sins. Krishna brings out 3 attributes of himself. One is he is unborn. Other thing is he is beginningless. Third is he is the supreme lord of all worlds. And our acharyas write that only to Krishna can these 3 attributes be applicable. For example, Brahma is unborn. He is not born from anything. But he is not beginningless. He has a beginning, which is source is Krishna. Similarly, there are many combinations where there is one person's attribute is fixed, but the other it's not fixed. Only for Krishna, clearly all these 3 things can be clearly applied. That he is unborn, he is beginningless, and the supreme lord of all the worlds. So that is the highlight of this particular verse, which Srila Prabhupada gives in detail, like what is Aja, what is the Supreme Lord, how does he act and things like that. Text 4 and 5. Buddhir jnanam asam moha, kshama satyam dama samaha, sukam dukham bhavo bhavo, bhayam cha bhayam evacha, ahimsa samata tushtis, tapo danam yasho yashaha, bhavanti bhava bhutanam, matta eva pritagvida. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of senses, control of mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy, all these various qualities of living beings are created by me in alone. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purports, he takes each of these characteristics and he tries to mention it. And there is one thing, this verse and the verse from the 16th chapter, later when we do it, there also Krishna describes about the transcendental qualities and he mentions ahimsa. And here ahimsa, Srila Prabhupada says the ahimsa means that we don't cause injuries to others, cause painful situations to others. And there ahimsa in the 16th chapter, Srila Prabhupada says killing of animals. Clearly he says ahimsa means that because every animal is in that particular body for a certain set of time, by killing that animal for its meat, then one is stopping the cycle of birth and death. So that is ahimsa. So ahimsa is a nice contract. But all of these are qualities which are described. But you might ask this question, why did Krishna give this things here? Why is he saying about these things when he's talking about the difficulty of knowing him? Because all these things are coming from modes of material nature. Somebody who is in the mode of goodness has intelligence, has self-control, has satisfied. And somebody who is in mode of ignorance is fearful, is anxious. All these qualities mentioned here are coming from the modes of material nature. And Krishna says, because they are coming from me, you cannot use these qualities to know me. For example, a person may be supremely intelligent, but that intelligence which is coming from Krishna cannot help him know Krishna. That is the reason why this particular set of qualities are mentioned here. This is in continuation theme of Krishna saying that nobody can know me really, truly well. Again, if we go back to the 7th chapter, there also Krishna says so many places, it's very difficult to know me. Is emphasizing that here. Then text 6 on page 454. Maharshaya saptapurve chatvaro manavastatha madbhava manasa jata yesham loka ima prajaha. The 7 great sages and before them the 4 other great sages and the manus, progenitors of the mankind, came from me, born of my mind, and all the living beings populating the various planets descend from them. Here Krishna gives the origin of species. that he is the source. From him came all these prajapatis, from him came all the manus, from him came all the sages, and they populated this whole world. And so the Krishna clearly says that I am the source, I am the origin of everything here. And why is Krishna saying all these things? Text 7 answers that question. Etam vibhutim yogam cha mam yo veti tatvatah so vikalpena yogena yujyate natra samchaya. One who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystique power of mine engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. The more we know of Krishna's opulence, then the more we are in awe of him, and the more we are kind of, yes, you know, I want to serve Krishna. Because he's just not some person who's speaking Gita. He's just not some person, you know, he's like a god, demigod status, some powerful person. No, he's the absolute truth. From him, all the opulences come. From him, everything comes. Whoa, yes, my lord, I know. You know, now I'm going to serve you. Because where I'm going to go? And then, as long as when we don't know the opulence of Krishna incomplete, there is a chance kind of, you know, I'll do my own thing and Krishna might not know about it. But when you know that Krishna is everywhere, he knows everything, where are you going to go? You become determined, you know. There's no chance. I'm convinced of the fact that Krishna is there everywhere. He's seeing everything. Everything is pervaded in him. So I want to serve him. So that's the reason Krishna kind of gives this impetus, so that you can know more and more about him. Text 7. Text 8. So till text 7, we have these verses where Krishna talks. Text 8 through 12, 8 through 11 are special verses of Gita. They are called the Chatushloki Gita, or the essential 4 essential verses of Gita. We will discuss that one by one. But any comments, any questions, any doubts so far, or any other criticisms I can take? Mataji, you have to use the mic. I'm sorry, because we have people on the online.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Shwetamata.
So from the 7th verse, is Krishna concluding that a person can know him only through pure devotional service. Is that the conclusion of the first few verses, or is it? Are we going to get to more now?
Well, here he says that unalloyed devotional service is pure devotional service. If you know the opulence of Krishna, you will engage in his pure devotional service. And the next four verses talk about what is that exchange all about. What do the devotees do to serve Krishna, and how Krishna in turn reciprocates with his devotees. So those are the subject matter for the next four verses. So yeah, you will engage in unalloyed, that is a pure devotional service.
So he will let us know the means of actually knowing him and understanding him.
Yes. He says that, you know, once you know my opulences, then you'll start serving me. Then you start serving me, what is the result of you serving me? How am I going to reciprocate with your service? Am I at all going to reciprocate, or I don't care?
Okay.
So Krishna will tell that.
Okay.
So text 8. Text 8 through 11. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattas sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddhabhava samanvita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So this is the first quality of knowing Krishna's opulences. It's a little bit of repeat on verse 7. But Krishna here, he says that those who know me, they will serve me. They will serve me with all their hearts and devotion. They'll give their heart to me. That is his thing. And text 9 is Natchitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantascha mam nityam tushyantita tushyanticha ramanticha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So these four verses are for the pure devotees, who are unalloyed devotees. And in this verse, they say what is the activities of those pure devotees. They are conversing about Krishna. They are talking about Krishna. They are enlightening one another about Krishna. And what's happening? They are getting great satisfaction. The beauty is that even just conversing about Krishna, without Krishna, at this point the reciprocation has not yet come. In next two verses he talks about how he is going to reciprocate. But just conversing about Krishna itself is source of great satisfaction, joy, happiness. Tushyanti charamanticha, they will be so happy, just conversing about me. And it is said, same thing, Shrunvatam Svakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Hradyantasto Yabhadrani, Vidunoti Suhrustam, Nashtaprayesho Abhadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavati Uttama Shloke, Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Then, Tada Rajasthamo Bhava, Kamaloba Dayashe, Cheta Ete Rana Vidim, Sitam Satve Prasati. Evam Prasanna Manaso. In that state of mind, it's happy mind. Why? Because we are talking about Krishna, conversing about Krishna, talking about his wonderful attributes. Just doing that itself is a source of happiness. Text 10 and text 11, Krishna says, now, okay, for those devotees who are engaged like this, how am I going to reciprocate? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Text 11. Tesham evanukampartam aham ajnana jamtamaha nashyami bhatma bhavasto jnana dhipena bhashvata. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So in these two verses, Krishna says, how am I going to reciprocate? That those who are constantly serving me, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. Buddhi Yoga. Here, Srila Prabhupada explains in deep what exactly is Buddhi Yoga and how Krishna gives the intelligence by which one can come to him. And the second thing he says is that I am a super soul in their heart, and I completely destroy the darkness which comes of ignorance, and their hearts are just lighted by this knowledge of me because of my own special mercy on them. And Srila Prabhupada writes that how he gives an interesting analogy here. This is a little bit it's a topic for debate. Let's read the last paragraph on the page 460. 460, Mataji. 460, last paragraph. Yeah. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without any difficulty. The qualification is that the person is always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion and render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him. So this is Krishna saying that, you know, if a person is... So I asked this question to my authority. Maharaj, you know, well, he says, why are we reading all these books? Krishna is there from within. He'll give you knowledge. He's Paramatma. He'll guide you. Why do you need to read these books? And Hanumat Mishra Maharaj said that, like, Paramatma within your heart is telling you to read Prabhupada's books. So you better follow his instructions and read Prabhupada's books. Because this can be used for somebody to say, you know, this Krishna is there within the heart. But this Prabhupada left so much in books so that we can actually take advantage of the knowledge. And the other aspect is that if you expect Krishna to give you knowledge, you are making him work for you rather than you trying to serve him. Oh, Krishna will give me knowledge, I'll wait for him. No, you make your effort, Krishna will give you realization from within. Yes, Akrunath Prabhuji.
I was noticing that, you know, in the first verses, Krishna is saying even the sages and even the demigods and even the sages can't know me. You know, and Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that it means that he's not known by speculation or this kind of material endeavor.
Right.
And then in these chaturshloki, Krishna is saying, I will reveal myself to you and show you how to come to me. And so he's showing that we come by these books, but it's not by some mundane scholarship of these books, but it's by... Like you said in the beginning of class, or in the notes, I think you said that by chanting good rounds, then we can understand these books.
Right.
You know, then by becoming purified in our heart, then we can be receptive. By, you know, having faith in the spiritual master and serving him, then we can become receptive to understand his messages.
Yes, thank you so much. Very nice point. Very sanguine point. Any particular comments on the Chaturshloki? All right. Let's move on to text. Yes, Jagrini Mataji.
One point that I
shall just push that all the way up. Yeah. Can somebody give it? Yeah, to just. Yes, ma'am.
Interesting, the last paragraph that we just read.
Right.
It also, to me, it also says for us to not be judgmental of one another. Because
right.
Because what Prabhupada is giving us in this little piece of his purport is that he's Prabhupada is so perceptive. His vision was so expansive that he could see the pitfalls of an organization.
Mm.
And when things are organized
right.
very nicely, the pros are that it makes it easy to perform devotional service. Everyone can stay within the lines. It's kind of a shortcut to doing things properly. But for those people who aren't quite able to follow those shortcuts or do that, the pitfalls of that organization could be that they could be judged by others within the organization as not good enough or not,
right.
whatever, because they're not following rote. And this is the mystical aspect of Krishna consciousness. That's not material, that it's really Krishna individually working within the hearts of every living entity to guide them. So it's important to not be thinking like that or judge others.
Oh.
That's what I get out of this also.
outstanding point. Actually, just to add to your point, so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was touring South India after his sannyas, and he came to Srirangam. And he saw this particular Brahmana. He was illiterate. He couldn't read much. And then he was trying to read Bhagavad Gita. And then the Bhagavad Gita book was upside down like this. And then he was trying to read something. He was trying to chant some mantra. It was imperfect. And all the other Brahmanas were laughing at his pronunciation. And then Mahaprabhu asked, so what is that that you see the Bhagavad Gita and you're crying tears of love? He said, well, I look at Gita, and when I realize how Arjuna, who is just an ordinary, is an ordinary jiva, and Supreme Lord Krishna is becoming his driver, I feel ecstasy and I just cry, and I don't know much about Gita. Then Mahaprabhu said, you actually know Gita. So the other people who were judgmental of his reading skills really didn't know Gita. So it's a nice point you brought up. Thank you. Yes, Mayapur Bihari Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. So Prabhuji, is it that reading scripture is a means to the goals? Or should I frame it, is just a means to the goal? Like chanting is the means and the goal.
Okay.
But scripture is a mean to the goal?
Well, there are two or three answers to that question. The scriptures, Srila Prabhupada writes, is to purify our intelligence, to strengthen our intelligence. Because in the path of devotional service, we have a lot of doubts. And when we don't have proper knowledge of scriptures, then unless Paramatma helps us from within, we don't really don't know what is correct or what is not. Am I making right path in the progress? The scriptures help us with that. And the chanting is not the means and the goals. It is the bhakti itself as a whole is the mean and the goal. Yes? Pure devotional service, when you perform, is the means to attain prema. But after you get prema, you still perform pure devotional service. So that becomes kind of mean and goal. And reading scriptures is a part of bhakti. So in that, reading scriptures becomes the mean and the goal itself, because it's one of the limbs of bhakti. Because when we read, we are sitting at lotus feet of Prabhupada and actually listening to his words. So it's kirtanam, shravanam, or reading is one and the same. It's, reading is also hearing. So that's the answer to your question. Is that? Thank you. Thank you. Any other? Okay. So text 12 through 18, Arjuna is, this is a little bit of key verses, important verses, because we understand how to understand what is the actual understanding of Gita and how Arjuna wants to know more about Krishna's opulences. So let's take to verses 12 and 13 on page 62. Parabrahma param dama pavitram paramam bhavan purusham shashvatam divyam adi devam ajam vibhum ahustvam rishyas sarve devarshir naradistatha asito devalo vyasa swayam chaiva bravishme. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala and Vyasa confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. So one of the things is that maybe, you know, Arjuna is flattering Krishna. Arjuna is his friend, so he's flattering Krishna. So it is said that all the other sages, they don't need to flatter. They also say the same thing. Asita, Devala, Vyasa, everybody is saying that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna is also understanding in the same aspect. Text 14. Sarvam etad ritam manye yanmam vadasi keshava nahite bhagavan vyaktim vidur deva nadanava. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you've told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. So, Srila Prabhupada writes that, you know, if the demigods can't understand, what about demons? They have no chance of understanding Krishna. Text 15. Swayam evatmanatmanam vetatvam purushottama bhuta bhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency. O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all being, God of gods, Lord of the universe. Here again, there are five attributes to Krishna. Purushottama, Bhuta Bhavana, Bhutesha, Deva Deva, and Jagatpate. And Srila Prabhupada explains in detail about what are these each aspects. So this is again the complete understanding. Then some might accept Krishna as like, you know, he's the origin of all, but he's the controller of everybody. He's also the controller. He's the maintainer. So everything is like, you know, complete summation of Krishna's attributes are given in this particular verse. And Prabhupada extensively writes about all these different aspects of Krishna. Text 16, 17 and 18 is Krishna, Arjuna asking, please tell me more about your opulences. Text 16 on page 467. Vaktum arhasya seshena divya hyatma vibhutayaha yabhir vibhutibir lokan imam swam yapyatishtati. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. Text 17. Katam vidyam aham yogins tvam sada parichintayan keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyosi bhagavan maya. O Krishna, O supreme mystic, how shall I constantly think of you and how shall I know you? In what various forms are you to be remembered, O supreme personality of Godhead? Here this question by Arjuna is more in response to think of me always. And then Arjuna asks, okay, how can I think of you always? Because I'm in this material world, I see mountains and oceans and you know, so many things around me. So how can I think of you? And then Krishna kind of slowly gives his opulences so that he can think of Krishna. Just like you have a person or those who have small children or those who have kids. You know, the child is not there, but if you see the shoes of that child, small shoes, then you actually remember that child. You know, you immediately think, oh, yes. Like, child is not there, but his only shoes are there. So similarly, Krishna, even though he's not present right in front of us, but he is situated in all of these opulences. And by looking at those opulences, then we can see of Krishna. Probably when you go through the verses, we'll see what opulences can we actually see of Krishna. And then probably it'll be an interesting exercise. Text 18. Page 468. Vishtarenatmano yogam vibhutim cha janardana bhuya kataya triptirhi shrinvato anasti me mritam. O Janardana, again, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you. For the more I hear, the more I want to taste the nectar of your words. Again, Srila Prabhupada gives this often quoted aspect of spiritual life, is that material work, material words, material things, after you have it for some time, they become tasteless. They become repulsive. You just don't want to do it anymore. For those who really want to have an experience, eat the same thing day in, day out for 3 days. Enough. 2-3 days is good enough. And then you're so tired of it, you don't want to eat for a month. So that is the nature of material world. You know, initially it was nice, but then after that it'll... But Krishna's words are so beautiful, so transcendentally pleasurable, that the more you hear, the more you want to hear. Now, every time it's fresh, every time it's new, every time there is something special that's going on. It's a fact. Prabhupada used to say that if you chant, he said Coca-Cola, Cola, Coca-Cola, something like that. If you chant that continuously, you will be tired after some time. But if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll never be tired. Krunath Prabhu had a comment on this. No? Okay. Yeah, I think I remember something like that. So that is the nature of spiritual world. That is the nature of spiritual topics. The more you hear, the more you want to hear. Why? Because Krishna's words, Krishna's attributes, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's names, everything is dynamic. Everything is new. It's infused with spiritual power. Nothing to do with stale material power. And the soul is also a part and parcel of Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the soul is also wanting that sort of dynamic nature. Not the happiness from the spiritual, material world, which is limited. So text 19. Here Krishna starts telling about his 19 through 42. This is These are the group of verses, and the chapter is divided into, so that we can understand how the whole chapter is laid out. The first group was not Krishna's difficulty in knowing about Krishna. The second group of verses was Chatushloki, four verses. The third group of the verses is Arjuna accepting Krishna as the Supreme Lord and asking him about his opulences. And the next group is from 19 through 42, Krishna telling about his different opulences. Thank you. Text 19 on page 469. Any questions before we move? Thank you. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Hantate Kateshyami, Divya Hyatma Vibhutayaha, Pradana Yata Kuru Shrestha, Nastyanto Vishtarasyame. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent, O Arjuna, for my opulence is limitless." And so Krishna gives, before he tells, he says, "Okay, I'll tell you a little bit. You know, I can't keep telling you everything, otherwise we'll have no end to it." So because it is said that Lord Ananta, with his thousands of hoods, has been singing about Krishna since time immemorial, and he hasn't found the limit of Krishna's qualities yet. He started in the beginning of time, and he's trying, he has no end. So if Krishna tried to do that here, then there would be no battle of Gita, period, trust me. We would be still in this, Krishna would be there in Kurukshetra still telling about his opulences, and we would go and meet him. Very impossible, because every day something new will be coming out. Tough. So Krishna says, "I'll tell you only chief of my opulences." And so let's start from text 20. Aham atma guda kesha sarva bhuta shayastitaha aham adischa madhyam cha bhutanam antayeva cha. I am the super soul, O Arjuna, seated in the hearts of all living entities. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. Text 21. Adityanam aham Vishnur, Jyotishyam Raviranshuman, Marichir Marutam Asmi, Nakshatranam aham Shishi. So in these two verses, Krishna says that I am the beginning and the middle and the end of all beings, which gives the nature of Krishna pervading all over the universe. He is there in every... In the universe, as the super soul, it's also there in Paramatma, as in everyone's heart. So he's there everywhere. As I was saying earlier, you can't escape Krishna. There's no way around. You can say, "You know, I can do something. Maybe he won't see." No, he will see, guaranteed, because he's there everywhere. And in this text 21, Adityanam aham Vishnur, Jyotishyam Ravi Ranshuman, Marichir Marutam Asmi, Nakshatranam aham Shashi. In this, there is a few of the verses. The Acharyas have put it a little differently, and let me take one by one. Here, Srila Prabhupada says, of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. And in the purport, in the first line, he says that there are 12 Adityas, of which Krishna is principal. So it seems to be a little bit different from what Krishna mentions in the verse. Adityas are when the sun is in 12 zodiac signs, it is named by different names. And that they are the 12 Adityas. And one of the names of Aditya is Vishnu. Now, Srila Baldeva Vidyabhushan has commented, or he said the name of Vishnu as Vaman, and Prabhupada translated it as Krishna. So we'll just leave it at that. Yes.
Adityas are also the sons of Aditi, right? And then Vamana is one of her sons, Indra's brother. Like, I remember there were 12 in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a story of Vamana Dev.
I see. Okay.
Coming as the, you know, one of the sons of Aditi.
Okay. Probably. Because the other thing is that, you know, later Krishna says of the Maruts, I am Marichi. And so those are the sons of Diti. And these are Aditi. Probably, yeah. Okay. That's a nice point. Thank you, Prabhuji.
Of the Daityas, isn't it later Prahlad is,
yes,
the Daityas?
Yes.
So those are the sons of Diti, or the Daityas,
right,
and the sons,
right,
of Aditi are the Adityas.
Ah.
And because Aditya means the sun also, so in astrology it probably has that meaning of the 12 signs of the zodiac of the sun. But I think those 12 aren't necessarily the sons of Aditi.
Thank you. Wonderful. Yes.
I read, I don't know whether it's 10th chapter or 11th chapter, somewhere here where Prabhupada described the sons of Aditi are known as Adityas. Because Adityas come from Aditi. Similarly, sons of Diti are known as Daityas. So he has that in one of those purports.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Nice. Because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has said in terms of sun signs. So we will come. There's another aspect to that. We'll come a little bit later. Okay. Let's move on. Any other questions or comments? No. Text 22. Vedanam sama vedosmi, devanam asmi vasavaha, indriyanam manaschasmi, bhutanam asmi chetana. Of the Vedas, I am the sama veda. Of the demigods, I am Indra, the king of heaven. Of the senses, I am the mind. And in the living beings, I am the living force, consciousness. Text 23. Yes. Prasad Prabhu.
So when he says of the Vedas, I am the sama veda. So what about other Vedas like Yajurveda?
So here, the whole, it's a good point. Thank you, you raised it up front. Here, Krishna is giving some group of things among which one is representation of him. It is not like, so Krishna is Samveda, and all the other Vedas are all bogus. That is not the understanding here. Yeah, I'll answer that and then I'll come one two. So that is the understanding here. Of all the oceans, he says, of all the bodies of water, I am ocean. That means to say that all the other bodies are not coming from Krishna or they are not... No, it's just amongst the group, when you see something best among a particular group, greatest, that you will see that is where I am. Of all, there's a splendor. That is Krishna's splendor in that. So that is the understanding here. Is that... Okay, Akrunath Prabhu, then Shweta Mataji, then Shailesh Prabhu, and Ramananda Saka Prabhu.
Also in the 9th chapter, he's already said, Riksama Yajurevacha, that he is those other three Vedas. But in the verse, in the purport to verse 35, where he says, Brihat Sama Tata Sam Nam, in
right.
this chapter,
right.
Srila Prabhupada explains a little further that among all the Vedas, he's the Sama. You know, if you want to say which of the Vedas is Krishna, then
right.
among them, he's the Sama. And he says, Sama Veda is rich with beautiful songs played by the various demigods. And one of these is the Brihat Sama song, which is an exquisite melody and is sung at midnight. So,
nice.
So it's a further elaboration. Why, you're, like you said, among all the stars, you know, he is the moon.
Right.
Among all the, among various things, you know, among all the birds, he is...
Garuda,
right.
Right, thank you.
So, Prabhuji, given a choice, I should read Sama Veda.
Well, given a choice, you should read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Then if you have time, you can read Sama Veda.
Okay.
Because it's a summary of everything. You know, all the Upanishads, all the Vedic knowledge, everything is condensed here and Krishna is speaking. And it's a lifetime of reading. But if you get a chance, sure, read Sama Veda, I have no problems. Yes, can I come to you later? Sorry.
No, Prabhuji, my comment was told by you already that
okay.
he is just taking his analogy as the best of the best.
Right.
So that's okay. how we would interpret what he's trying to say here.
Thank you much. And then next is Shailesh Prabhu. You had Raman Saka Prabhu.
And this is again regarding Krishna's opulences. Again, as Mataji pointed out, Krishna is saying that out of these, you know, he is the one, he's distinguishing himself out of, you know, the given set of things. He says that I am the mind. That means my mind is Krishna, right? I can think like that.
Well, here is the difference. Mind is not Krishna. Mind is a representation of Krishna.
Okay.
So when you see that the force of mind is so strong and the mind does its own thing. Wow, mind is like, you know, Krishna says, I am the mind, just see how powerful it is. So it's not, mind is not Krishna. In that case, what happens is otherwise we can actually get a pet shark at home and offer it aarti every single day. Mm-hmm. Right, Master, you can get a shark, and then because mm-hmm. he says, among the fishes, I am the shark. Get the shark, put in a shark tank, and offer aarti every day.
Mm-hmm. So I am the mind. Similarly, in another sloka, he says, I am the intelligence of the intelligent.
Right.
And he also says, I am the, and in the living beings, I am the living force.
Right.
Which means the atma, the soul.
Right.
Refers to soul.
Correct.
So he's pretty much saying that everything is him. So in that way, you know, we also know that everything is him, right? And then he takes a few things out of that. He is that, and if he's I guess what here Krishna is saying is about his greatness, really, because otherwise he is everything.
He's opulent. There is,
yeah. Yeah.
For example, you have houses, okay? And the most best or the most powerful, the most opulent of all the houses in the US is White House. Why?
Houses are in the White House.
Oh, yeah. Because it's right. It's something like that. So it's like, you know, it's not like White House is one of the opulence of President of the United States. He has, like, you know, Air Force One. He has so much of power, authority. One of his opulences. When you see White House, you automatically don't say that this is a homeless shelter. You can never associate like that. White House, oh, this is the President of the United States. That's where we're going to. So that's how, when Krishna says, I am the best among all these, when you see that, you'll remember Krishna. You think of Krishna. Wow, he's so opulent. Same thing. That's the gist. That's the, like, you know, the theme of this chapter. Yes, Akrunath Roji. Shraddha Mataji also had a question later.
When in the verse Keshu Keshu Cha Bhaveshu, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, that's the one where Arjuna is asking, tell me how to see you within your creation, as the opulence things in your creation. And Bhaveshu is referring to the material world. So this chapter, it's relating to, like, for example, the first chapter of the second canto, where the universal form is described as a first step in God realization. Mm-hmm. That those who are still affected too materially to actually see the spiritual qualities of Krishna, he's showing them how he exists within the material world as the and therefore we should see the whole universe in relation to him as a spark of his splendor. It's entirely just resting on a fragment of his energy.
Nice.
And so everything that's beautiful and opulent and awe-inspiring in nature should remind us of Krishna, who's even the source of that thing. So right. He's even more opulent and more awe-inspiring. And that's the sense of this chapter. Therefore, in the beginning of this group of things, Srila Prabhupada says that the impersonalist and the pantheist are not here. In the last paragraph of the purport to text 19, he says the impersonalists or pantheists cannot understand the exceptional opulences, that neither those who say that he has nothing to do with the world or those who say that the things of the world are really him
right.
understand. But actually, or another way to put it, Bhaktisiddhanta says that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is both transcendent and immanent, that he's not contaminated, like, with qualities of nature of the world, but at the same time, we can't say that anything existing in the world is separate from him. But actually, it's all resting on his energy. These two things are supposed to be contradiction. That the impersonalist that says it's only transcendental, or those who are really against representation of form,
right.
like against deity worship and things like that, Muslims and Jews and things, you know, just transcendent. You can't represent him in the world because he's too beyond anything in the world. But then others who say, in every experience we can experience God. Well, we can, but only, you know, but not independently of his. Following his rules and being surrendered to him and actually accepting him. You can't just say, he's everything, therefore why should I go to the temple? So,
nice.
Okay.
Nice point. Yes, Rakshit. Actually, Shraddha Mataji had a question. You're done? Okay. He already has. Thank you. You had a question?
There's another point that also comes out here. If you look at the purport, because in the purport of this verse, the distinction between matter and a living entity, matter and spirit is made. And it says that the characteristic of the living entity is that it has consciousness, whereas matter does not. And it also goes to say that consciousness cannot be produced by combination of matter. So clearly the distinctions are made between the two. At the same time, Krishna is identifying himself with both things. He's saying, I'm the mind, and I'm also the consciousness of the living entity.
Nice.
So this, you know, along the lines of this discussion, it looks like a contradiction of sorts. But then again, one could look upon it is that matter is made of material energy, which is also emanating from Krishna. But it is distinct from the spiritual energy or the living entity, which is also him.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you, Rakshit. Nice point.
I just had a thought on what Prabhuji was saying about whether to read Samaveda as opposed to the other Vedas like that. Just like, and what came to mind was for us, and it's not to say that we don't already know this, but I just thought I'd mention. When we read Bhagavad Gita, we're going to read so many things Krishna says to do, right, to get to him. And so many of those things are actually pretty complicated, complex. Mm-hmm. I heard a very nice class a couple days ago. I listened on the internet, a class Shivaram Swami was giving. Someone had asked him a question about one of the things, I didn't want to get into too much detail, take too much time, but it was something about one of our habits in ISKCON that we do. This person analyzed it as coming from a Muslim background, and he went into this whole history of how it came to be, so why do we follow it? And Maharaj very nicely said, the history might be there, but for us, our beginning point of reference is Srila Prabhupada. Mm. So that's where we start.
Right.
And the thing about that is it's our benediction, it's our blessing that we've been given the spiritual master to make things quick and easy for us in this age. It's kind of like where I used to live up on the mountain up there. There, you could get to my house if you followed a GPS, but the GPS always took you some crazy way to my house. And so many people, I would tell them, just turn right here, go 2 miles, turn left here, and they wouldn't listen because they felt like the GPS knew better. Because GPS was more authority, was more, right? So they would do, and they would take them an hour, and they'd go, well, listen. But I knew how to get there. I knew the quick way because I did. So that's how I feel like going to Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes people, and we've heard this argument with the other branches of, you know, our God brothers, God, whoever, other branches that think it's too simple. Too simple, you know. But actually, Prabhupada knows. He knows what's best for us. His books have everything. And if we start there with any of our questions, we're going to get the quickest answers and the best answers. And that's what's there for us.
Nice. Outstanding. Thank you, Mathis. Any other questions? Yes, Shraddha Mataji had an observation.
So Prabhuji, when I think about the verses where Krishna says that among the senses I am the mind, and in the living being I am the soul, living force, I just look at it very simply as just the means that Krishna is saying how to remember him. So when you're looking at all the senses that we have, the mind is the strongest, so that represents Krishna because that will be the best way to remember him. Similarly, when a living being is in front of us, what's the best thing in the living being? That's the soul inside. So that's how you should remember. Otherwise, everything is Krishna. Krishna's energy. So there's no question of, you know, whether he's material or, you know, like, among the senses are material, so is Krishna then material versus when he says, I'm the living force and the living entity, then he's in the transcendental. I'm just thinking, I look at this chapter as ways to remember, and is that the right
yes,
way to do that?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. That's what Arjuna's whole thing was. How can I remember you in this material world? How can I remember you? Either Ramananda Sakha Prabhu and then Shweta Mataji.
Prabhuji, but if we take the Krishna's words as they are, he says that out of the senses I am the mind. He could have said of the senses I represent mind. And similarly, you can he said throughout it, he says, I am, I am. He says, he doesn't say, I represent. And then why do we take a different meaning here?
Because the simple fact that he says, I'll tell you about my opulences. He doesn't say how many farms have expanded. And when Arjuna asks him, he says, I'll tell you my chief opulences. And he doesn't say my or I opulences, my opulences. So that is Krishna's. So then he just says like that. It's nothing to do, literally taking those words is not the right way, because everywhere Prabhupada says that of those things, you know, this is what is represented by Krishna. So, good point though.
Prabhuji,
he will decide who gets first, what I say.
Okay. So, in this set of verses, Lord Krishna has given different ways of remembering him. But on a day-to-day experience, on a day-to-day life, how practical is this?
Did you ever go to ocean?
So whenever I go to ocean, I remember him. But on a day-to-day basis, man, I don't read Vedas, you know. Of course, sometimes when I'm unable to control the mind, then maybe I could say, okay, this is Lord Krishna.
That way you definitely will control the mind, if you think like that in that point of time.
So, on a day-to-day basis, I don't see the stars to think of moon and, you know, stuff like that. But, okay. How do I correlate this with day-to-day experience?
Day-to-day...
practically.
No, you see moon, you see mind, you see the soul in other beings. You see the sky. When you see shark or you see some image of shark, then when you read... you read these verses... And once we read, probably try to see in your own view whether something makes sense. And then probably next time when we assemble for reading chapter 11, you can tell us about your realizations on this. How about that? You go through this and then makes sense, it doesn't make sense. You'll experience for yourself. It's Shweta Mataji and then... Okay.
So Prabhuji, I think one comment from what he just said is he's just trying to say through all these examples that of all the gods, he's the supreme.
Right.
Right? So of all the things, he's representing himself as the supreme thing amongst them. So I think we can conclude by saying that of all the gods, he's the supreme. So he's everything. That's the conclusion. But there is one thought that was bothering me. So this whole chapter says that this whole chapter talks about knowing Krishna. And in the beginning verses, Krishna mentioned that neither the sages nor the demigods, neither of them actually know me, even though they have all the intelligence. And you also made a comment stating that intelligence given by Krishna cannot be used to know him. Right? And then in the 10th verse, in the last paragraph that we just read, it has been mentioned that if a person is not intelligent enough, but he is attached to a spiritual organization or he is following some kind of devotional practice, Krishna will provide him an intelligence to attain him. So knowing Krishna and attaining Krishna, is it the same thing, Prabhuji? And is he referring... Is he telling us that if we know Krishna, we will also attain him by some means? And if that is true, what intelligence is he going to provide to a person who is not intelligent enough but still attached to a spiritual organization to attain him? Is this spiritual intelligence? And if that is true, then most of the sages or all the learned people, I assume, definitely possess spiritual or higher intelligence than ordinary human beings. So, that's...
Very good point. Let's open the shloka books. Let's read one particular verse. Page 359, please. This is from Kathopanishad. This is a very important verse. This is the second verse from Kathopanishad. 1, 2, 23. Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo na medhaya na bahuna shrutena yamevaishi vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrinute tanum swam. The Supreme Lord is not attained by expert explanations, by vast intelligence, nor even by much hearing. He is attained only by one, he who chooses himself. To such a person, he manifests his own form. So, when we are trying to attain the Lord, seeing our sincerity, Krishna reciprocates. And unless he reveals himself, no amount of one's own endeavor can help one understand Krishna. That is the meaning of this. So one who is trying to serve Krishna, then Krishna, seeing the sincerity, will reciprocate. And he'll give that knowledge and realization by which you can actually see the Lord. And then you know everything. Because Krishna revealed that truth to you. As we read Bhagavad Gita, we get idea of Krishna. We get knowledge of Krishna. But that will not be complete till he has showered his mercy to actually realize that knowledge. Case in point. We had Srila Sanatana Goswami was instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For 2 months, he was instructed in Varanasi. And he told the truths about everything. Sanatana Goswami was an expert scholar right from his childhood. He knew everything of Bhagavatam. He knew everything of all the scriptures. He was a master in so many languages. But out of his utter humility and to show path to the world, Srila Sanatana Goswami, he begged Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "My dear Lord, if you think I am fit, then please bless me so that I can realize this knowledge." And then Mahaprabhu said, "Let this knowledge be revealed to you. Unless the Supreme Lord gives that mercy, this knowledge remains hidden." That's why it is called secret. Why is Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam? What is so secret about Gita when everything is right here? There are like 4,000 or 5,000 translations of Gita. There is every word to word. Everything is there. But after our endeavors, when Krishna gives us his blessings, that is the realization. Then you'll know the secret of Gita. And Rakshit Prabhu had a comment or observation there. But just quick. Does that answer your question, Mataji? All right. Okay.
Respect to knowing or understanding Krishna, Krishna will say later in the Bhagavad Gita, he does that in the 11th chapter and the 18th, that I can only be known or understood by devotional service.
Nice.
He clearly comes and says that. So then we would have to assume that devotional service in itself, although it may be a formula or a means to know him, still it would have to be his mercy or reciprocation for you to understand.
Well,
it's not automatic.
Excellent. Thank you. Nice point. Shall we... Akshanath Prabhu had a comment and then we... Midway through, we are doing okay. Time-wise.
I was just looking again at the purport to number 19 and that reminded me of the verse about Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grayam Indriya. Okay. Right. We don't understand Krishna's quality. Nobody can really comprehend him in fullness.
Right.
There's another verse here where Arjuna says, Swayam Eva Atmanatmanam Veta Tvam Krishna. Only you can really know yourself. Because you're unlimited and there's no...
Right.
With our, so Prabhupada is saying here, it's not possible to comprehend the greatness of Krishna and his opulences. The senses of the individual soul are limited and do not permit him to understand the totality of Krishna's affairs. Still, the devotees try to understand Krishna, but not on the principle that they will be able to understand Krishna fully at any specific time or in any state of life. Rather, the very topics of Krishna are so relishable that they appear to the devotees as nectar. Thus, the devotees enjoy them. In discretion, Krishna's opulences and diverse energies, the pure devotees take transcendental pleasure. So this purifying process, that Krishna reveals himself in some particular way to the devotees so that the devotee can exchange... rasa, you know, and serve Krishna, so that the verses that, you know, by nobody can understand with the blunt material senses Krishna's name and qualities, etc., but by purifying them through service, then nabhavet grayam indire sevan mukhe hi jivado swayam evat
spuratyada,
yeah, so they become revealed.
Nice, thank you. Okay, all right. Text 23, I think we are on 23. Yeah, we were at Samved. So, text 23 on page 473. Rudranam Shankaras Chasmi Vitesho Yaksharakshasam Vasunam Pavakas Chasmi Mero Shikarinamaham. Of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva, and of Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Kuvera, and of the Vasus, I am Fire, and of the Mountains, I am Meru. So there is one interesting question here is that of all the Yakshas and Rakshasas, he is Kuvera. Kuvera is the treasure of demigods. So I, if somebody has time, maybe we can research on the history of Kuvera, of how Kuvera became the treasurer of demigods. You wouldn't definitely give your wealth in the hands of a person who is, but but that's an interesting history. But because he's the best among the Rakshasas, probably he's just like Prahlada among demons. This is something we can read up on the history to see who is Kuvera and how he became the treasurer of demigods. Just a thought. I don't have an answer to that. There are different. There are Danavas, which are demons, Rakshasas, Yakshas. There are different classes of people. So, among the Daityas or Danavas is Prahlad. Right. Yeah. Any other? Yes. Akranath Prabhuji.
In the story of Dhruva Maharaj, then his brother is killed by Yakshas, and he goes and starts slaughtering the Yakshas. And then eventually Swayambhuva Manu comes and tells him to stop. But I also think that Kuvera is involved because of his connection with... I might not be right about that. But I remember reading in Bhagavatam, there's stories in Bhagavatam about Kuvera's affinity with Yakshas, but I don't remember exactly the detail.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Sravan Sakupa.
Kuvera is described as the king of Yakshas. So that's the reason where when Yakshas were getting killed by Dhruva Maharaj, the Kuvera comes.
Probably they are allies of demigods. I don't know. Anyway, text 24 on page 473. Puro dasam cha mukyam mam vidhiparta brihaspatim senaninam aham skanda sarasam asmi sagara. Of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief brihaspati. Of the generals, I am Kartikeya. And of the bodies of water, I am the ocean. Text 25. Maharshinam Bruguraham Giram Asmi Ekamaksharam Yajnanam Japa Yajnosmi Sthavananam Himalayaha. Of the great sages, I am Brugu. And of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names, Japa. And of the immovable things, I am Himalayas. Ashvattha Sarvavrikshanam Devarshinam Chanaradaha Gandharvanam Chitrarataha Siddhanam Kapilomuni. Of all the trees, I am the banyan tree, and of the sages, I am the demigod. Of the sages among the demigods, I am Narada. Of the Gandharvas, I am Chitrarata, and among the perfected beings, I am the sage Kapila. Uchashraivasam Ashwanam Vidhimam Amrutodbhavam Airavatam Gajendranam Naranam Chanaradipam. Of horses, know me to be Uchashrava, produced during the churning of the ocean for nectar. Of lordly elephants, I am Airavata, and among men, I am the monarch. Prabhupada writes in the purport that because nowadays there is no monarchy and it's completely abolished, he just leaves it at that. He doesn't give an answer, yes or no, whether the president of US is a representative of God or not, he just leaves it at that point of time. Just leaves it. So, because monarchy is abolished and there is no trained king, and so... Just an interesting point. Text 28. Ayudanam aham vajram dhenunam asmi kamaduk prajanas chasmi kandarpa sarpanam asmi vasukihi. Of the weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Among cows, I am Surabhi. Of the causes for procreation, I am Kandarpa, the god of love. And of the serpents, I am Vasuki. Text 29. Anantas chasmi naganam varuno yadasamaham pitrunam aryama chasmi Yama Samyatam Maham. Of many hooded Nagas, I am Ananta, and among the aquatics, I am the demigod Varuna. Of the departed ancestors, I am Aryama, and among the dispensers of law, I am Yama, the Lord of Death. 2 points in these 2 verses. The first verse, among the serpents, I am Vasuki, It's referred to a single hooded serpent. And in the next verse, Naganam are many hooded serpents. So that's the difference. And also Kandarpa, the god of love, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, again, this is for procreation for children, not that any sexual activity represents Krishna or any illicit sexual activity represents Krishna. So those are the 2 points here. Text 30. Prahladas chasmi daityanam kala kalayatamaham mriganam cha mrigendroham vainetayas cha pakshinam. Among the daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlada. Among subduers, I am time. Among beasts, I am the lion. And among birds, I am Garuda. Pavanaha pavatam chasmi rama shastra britam aham jhasanam makaras chasmi srotasam asmi janavi. Of the purifiers, I am the wind, and of the wielders of weapon, I am Rama, and of fishes, I am the shark, and of the flowing rivers, I am the Ganges. So the acharyas say, here is the little bit of which Rama is being referred to here. Parushuram. Yeah, the acharyas say it's Parushuram, because Parushuram is one of the empowered incarnations of God. He's the Shaktavesh avatar, and he's the empowered incarnation of God. So that's where I say it is Parashuram. Text 32. Sarganam adirantascha madhyam chaivaham arjuna adhyatma vidya vidyanam vada pravadatamaham. Of all creations, I am the beginning and the end and also middle, O Arjuna. Of all the sciences, I am the spiritual science of self. And among the logicians, I am the conclusive truth. So here again, the vada pravadatamaham. So the debate or the logic, it happens in three types. There are three types of different Prabhupada writes in his purport. There are three types of debates. One is called vitanda, one is called jalpa, and other is vada. So in vitanda, apparently, is that you try to defeat the opposition. You don't try to establish your own thesis. You don't try to establish your own premise. Nothing. The whole goal is just to defeat the opposition, just like lawyers. Whether your client is guilty of murder or 10,000 murders, you don't care. As long as they defeat the opposition, you're victorious. That's the kind of vitanda. And jalpa means through specious, through false arguments and logic, you try to defeat your opposition. You establish your own thing, but your whole goal is to defeat the opposition. That is the goal of jalpa. But vada is that you are not trying to defeat them, or you are not trying to defeat yourself or be victorious for yourself. You are merely trying to establish the conclusive truth based on facts. That is called vada. So there are three types of debates or three types of way to establish conclusive truth. And Krishna says, I am amongst these, I am vada. Thank you. Vitanda is that you don't try to establish your own premise. You are just bent on defeating the opposition. Pardon? Yeah, it's mainly, I have nothing to stake a claim on, but I am here to defeat you, that's all. And yeah, jalpa is that there are certain Sanskrit terms. You induce all these, specious arguments, false logics, and some other means deviously to defeat the opponent while you try to establish your own premise. Both the things happen at the same time. But then the victory is important in both the cases. In vada, there is no question of victory or defeat, just to find out what's the truth. Yes, those are a different line. Yeah, there are 10 kind of jalpas. So, but that's a different category. It doesn't fall under the debate. It's 30th. No, 32, sorry. It's there. Prabhupada writes in the last paragraph. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhuji, here it says, of the purifier, I am the wind. So it appears like wind is the best purifier. I was just thinking, like, we use water for achaman and we use fire for sacrifices, and we always say fire purifies everything. Then wind is something even above that, that Krishna says, I am wind, I am the purifier, I am the wind.
Yeah, I saw that one of your questions. Achaman is mainly ritual. It's a form of purification for entering into the deity. Now, I have to look it up, Mataji. I remember something in 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where there are different ways of purifying things. If you have extra money, then, or you get money through illegal means, you can purify it by giving charity. If there is some muchi object, you can do something. So I have to look it up on exactly where is the connection between an achaman and purifying. Right.
What's in these verses are also very poetic, and when you not thinking of them so literally, but getting the essence of them, if you if there's some odor or there's some foul thing, and there's some nice wind that comes, and it just kind of breaks it all up and kind of dispenses it very quickly, very easily. The sun also will dry something up and purify it. But the wind is very powerful. It's kind of like if you step back and think
right.
of things in that way, you easily get it more than just literally trying to
right.
understand
right.
the words.
Thank you. The other point I heard was that in Delhi, in India, it is a landlocked city, and Mumbai is next to the seashore. I heard that the pollution levels in Delhi are much higher because there is no wind from the sea, which is purifying all the...
Same here in California.
Okay. Oh, is it?
Oh,
it's,
oh. Yeah, the highest pollution is in these, like Los Angeles and places
with
the basins.
Oh.
That's where the levels go up very high.
I see. Okay. Thank you. Text 33. We have 20. We are doing good on time. That's not a problem. 479, page text 33. Aksharanam akarosmi dvandva samasikasya cha aham eva akshaya kalo data aham vishvato mukha. Of the letters, I am letter A, and among compound words, I am the dual compound. I am also inexhaustible time, and of the creators, I am Brahma. Text 34. Mrityu sarva haras chaham udbhavas cha bhavishyatam. Kirti Shrir Vakcha Narina Smritir Medha Dhritikshamaha. I am all devouring death, and I am generating principle of all that is yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. So somebody said that, you know, all these qualities are just women. I mean, like, no, men can't have the steadfastness, patience, intelligence, or men are less intelligent, or what? So the point was that this is one of the opulence or energy of Krishna, which is of feminine nature. I mean, in Sanskrit, some of the terms are given genders rather than calling it. Like even in English language, we do that. For example, a ship is always to a feminine gender, right? She sailed or she did that. A ship is a ship. Why do you give her male or female? Why do you give it female? Similarly, in Sanskrit also, some of the terms or some of the attributes are given feminine designation. And this relates to the feminine potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada also says the same purport, that even a man can also have the same, all these qualities. That's nothing to do with strict gender or gender limitations. So that's the point Krishna says. Okay. Text 35. Brihat sama tata samnam gayatri chandasamaham masanam margashirshoham ritunam kusumakaraha. Of the hymns, I am the Samved. Of the hymns in the Samved, I am Brihat sama. And of the poetry, I am Gayatri. Of months, I am Margashirsha, November, December. And of the seasons, I am the flower bearing spring. Text 36. Dyutam chalayatam asmi tejas tejas vinamaham jayosmi vyavasayosmi satvam satvatamaham. I am also the gambling of cheats, and of the splendid I am splendor. I am victory, I am adventure, and I am the strength of the strong. Again, here, because Krishna is the, among the cheating tendencies, Krishna represents gambling, doesn't mean we do gambling and think it is Krishna. Exactly. Cheating. So you want to get cheated, you can gamble in the name of, you know, that's a nice way of getting cheated. I'm doing it for Krishna, but here I'm getting cheated. Or, you know, this process, Krishna says, I'm gambling, so I'm doing gambling. You'll be lost, ruined. And there are many, many people who get ruined like that. So it's just, Prabhupada writes, he differences, he says that the best among the cheating, because Krishna is the supreme, he has, his potency is just not one-sided, his potency is multi-sided. And then if you want to get cheated, he, Krishna, comes in the form of gambling and he cheats you, that's all. And there are like millions of instances, if you see in the newspapers or you see how people get cheated of their wealth and how there are like gambling anonymous and how they have to get overcome with all that, there is so much of stuff going on. We don't want that sort of interaction with Krishna. Not a positive interaction. And also, here Prabhupada writes, Jayosmi, I am the victory, I am the adventure, I am the strength of strong. So if we see any such things around us, then we should see it's actually Krishna that's creating all those things. Somebody is victorious, if somebody has strength. You know, that's a representation of Krishna. Instead of feeling envious, we see that, wow, Krishna is manifesting in that particular way. Thank you. That's it. Then again, if you take it literally, then you actually go and do an aarti to Bill Gates or somebody because, you know, Krishna is somehow becoming manifesting victory or some sports or something like that. That's not the true sense. Because you see, perceive Krishna. Oh, I see. In the material world, something has happened. Something extraordinary has happened. That potency is Krishna. That's the whole theme. Then even through the mundane activities, reading newspaper, you can think about Krishna. Of course, if you read the chapter first and if you are situated. Otherwise, if you just read newspaper, you'll get lost there only. Any questions, any comments? Let's move on. Text 37. Vrishninam vasudevosmi pandavanam dhananjaya muninam apyaham vyasa kavinam ushanakavi. Of the descendants of Vrishni, I am Vasudev, and of the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. Of the sages, I am Vyasa, and among great thinkers, I am Ushana. So, interesting here, on this verse, is among the descendants of Vrishni, I am Vasudev. Who is Vasudev? Okay, that's a nice thing. Ramananda Sakha Prabhu had a question, had an answer. Because the thing is this, if Krishna is Vasudev himself, then, you know, it's like saying, I car, not my car. Because my car is my opulence. It's I car, so it's a little contradictory.
Because I read the purport, so Vasudev here refers to Balaram.
Yeah, that's what Srila Prabhupada writes. See, he's Balaram, he's one of his opulences. Because Vasudeva also can mean Krishna or Balaram. But again, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes that Vasudeva here refers to his father. Because here it says Vasudeva with a. According to the rules of grammar, sometimes Vasudeva and Vasudeva can mean to be the same person. So Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it is his father, Vasudeva. Because all these are amshas or part and parcel of God, here later also he composes, it's my amsha. So it cannot be him. It is but his own amsha which is the source of all this splendor. So he says Vasudeva. So again there is a little bit of, but we take, as Mataji so rightly corrected us, pointed us out, we take Prabhupada's purports as the starting point, so it's Balaramji. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has that sort of explanation also, just to give you an idea. Many, many meanings you can get according to Acharya. So. Text 38. Dando dhamayatam asmi, nitir asmi jigitsitam, maunam chaivasmi guhyanam, jnanam jnanavatamaham. Among all means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. Of secret things, I am silence, and of the wise, I am wisdom. So this is something we can see, you know, people getting punished because of their deeds. Then you see that Krishna is there. His power as punished, as a person who's meeting out punishment is there. Right? You can practically observe that. If somebody is going to jail because of something, or is being convicted of something, then we know, you know, Krishna is there at play. His potency of punishing somebody for their bad deeds is there, right there. And of those who seek victory, I am morality. So if you try to seek victory immorally, then because that is one question, you know, like, you know, most of the people, they are victorious, but they don't have any sense of morality in them, especially in the modern world. Nothing surprising about it, because Bhagavatam says the Kali Yuga, people are just respected for the money they have. They really don't care about character. As long as you have money, you are a person born in a very high family. You are a person of very good character. And you can do no wrong. Justice is always there to help you out because you have money. So that is the nature of Kali Yuga. Okay, but that sort of, then Krishna says, amongst those who have victory and morality, is that if you have the victory in using moral values, that is Sri Krishna. Otherwise, it's just your own manipulation, your own mental concoction, that you manipulated, you cheated, you lied, you do something and you got money. That's not going to remain forever. Because that's not representative of Krishna. Neither people will be happy with that. Rakshit Prabhu had a comment, an observation.
Well, at the same time, I wanted to go back to an earlier comment you made in discussing the purport of the previous verse, that when something has been achieved in the material world, which is excellent, accomplished, it's also Krishna. So there we have another paradigm. Wealth is one, accomplishment is another. So then Krishna is, somebody has accomplished something, excelled, sports, academics, whatever, and we say that's Krishna. Then would we look at the means by which that is achieved, means the morality involved or the character involved, or is just the accomplishment per se?
No, we take both. For example, there were many sports people who won the prize and later they were debarred because of doping charges. Right? There was no morality involved per se. Again, this is mundane morality, but then that morality is in one sense guided by Krishna, even though they may not have an idea of Krishna.
Yeah, and the other point related to that is that when we attribute these accomplishments in the material world to Krishna, then it conveys a message that excelling in the material world as such is not a bad thing. We know that on one hand, the message that comes out from the Gita and all is that this is a temporary, miserable world.
Yes.
Okay? Material existence, don't go after it. There are traps, it's dangerous. Take on to spiritual life. Okay? And so then we have to contend with this. Then when we say, well, when someone excelled in the material world, Krishna became manifest. And so there, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Okay. I see the point where you're going. Well, if as a part of your duty, for example, you are Vaishya, and then your duty is to do business. As a part of business, you are using moral means and you achieve a lot of success or wealth. Then that is Krishna. That is a manifestation of Krishna. But at the same time, Krishna says that those who think that they are the doers are in the illusion. Right? We hear third chapter, Prakritir Kriyamanani, Gunai Karmani Sharvasha, Ahankara Vimuratma, Kartaham Iti Manyate. So what is the consciousness of the person who has achieved victory? Does he think that I am doing it, which is gotten out of his karma, or does he realize that it's happening through Krishna's will? Therein lies the difference of perception. Yes, Jagri. Does that a little bit?
Yes, it does, and I would just close it
with the follow-up comment that as such, then engaging in a particular activity that leads to excellence is not a bad thing.
Yes, if it comes as a course of your due righteous engagement in that activity, no, it's not a bad
thing. Yeah, and the point is well taken that if one thinks that he or she is the doer,
right,
then there's the fall that comes there.
That's true. Thank you. Yes, Mataji.
I was also thinking about what Rakshit was just saying, and it's actually really complex,
right?
Because it kind of depends. When did you come in contact with devotees? When did you start your spiritual life? Look at George Harrison.
I mean, he was so dear to Srila Prabhupada, and he actually wanted to take initiation. Prabhupada said no. So there's so many different variables, and I think that Prabhupada's instruction to us has always been to do what's favorable to your Krishna consciousness and reject what's unfavorable. So if you're pursuing some goal in life, and along the way you're finding it's taking you in a bad place, then it would probably be best for you to reject that. But if you're pursuing something and it's not interfering with your devotional life or your understanding of Krishna consciousness, then it's meant to be. It's a good thing. It's kind of like you have to judge it as you come. I don't think there's one rule of thumb.
Thank you, Anthony. Excellent point. Shall we? All right, thank you. Text 39 on page 484. Yachapi sarva bhutanam bijam tadaham Arjuna natad asti vinas yatsyan maya bhutam characharam. Furthermore, O Arjuna, I am the generating seed of all existences. There is no being, moving or non-moving, that can exist without me. We shall quickly read the purport because it's such short and there is a question in there. Purport: everything has a cause, and that cause or seed of manifestation is Krishna. Without Krishna's energy, nothing can exist. Therefore, he is called omnipotent. Without his potency, neither the movable nor the immovable can exist. Whatever existence is not founded on the energy of Krishna is called Maya, that which is not. So, Shraddha Mataji's group, when they were reading, they had this question. They had a question in the last line of the purport. Whatever existence is not founded on the energy of Krishna is called Maya. Means that, what is that energy which is not founded on Krishna? That was their question. Raise Mataji. So here, Krishna says in ample places in Gita that I am the source of everything. Material, spiritual, everything comes from me. It's beyond doubt that there can't exist anything without Krishna. Is that an accepted fact? I mean, based on our understanding of Gita. So here, when we say Maya, it means to say we should go back to the Chatushloki verse of the Bhagavatam, which says that whatever there appears to be of any value without connection to me is my energy, is my illusory energy called Maya. So the Maya is like I thinking it belongs to me or it has no connection to Krishna. That is Maya. Not a particular object is Maya or not a particular aspect is Maya. It's my own vision of how I look at the object. Is that, does that kind of, is that right, Akruna? Yes.
This is an important distinction between the philosophy of illusion that the followers of Shankaracharya have, the Vivartavad, and then the philosophy of transformation of energy that Lord Chaitanya establishes.
Right.
Like you said, the illusion is that it's not connected to Krishna, not that it has no actual existence.
Right.
And therefore, things, even the things of this world can be used in Krishna's service.
Right.
And I think it's connected to this idea of Falgu Vairagya and Yukta Vairagya and Asaktasya Vishayan, that even the objects of the senses, everything, they don't have to be rejected, but rather they have to be employed in properly in service.
Nice, thank you. Shall we move on? Text 40, page 485, Nantosthi mama divyanam vibhutinam parantapa esha tuddeshata prokto vibhuter vistaro maya. O mighty conqueror of enemies, there is no end to my divine manifestations. What I have spoken to you is but a mere indication of my infinite opulences. Text 41. Yad yad vibhutimat sattvam srimad urjitam evava tattad evava gachatvam mama tejomsha sambhavam. Know that all opulent, beautiful and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. So here, the 41 actually qualifies what opulences of Krishna are being mentioned here. There are three aspects. One is Vibhutimat in the verse, Srimat and Urjitam. So here if you see Vibhutimat is opulences and Srimat is beautiful, Urjitam is glorious. So these are special opulences which Krishna is trying to mention here in this particular verse. He's qualifying those opulences at the end of the chapter. And then next chapter we'll read it with purport. It is interesting. Text 42 on page 486. Athava bahunaitena kim jnatena tava arjuna vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam ekamshena stito jagat. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord is represented throughout the entire material universes by His entering into all things as the Super Soul. The Lord here tells Arjuna that there is no point in understanding how things exist in their separate opulence and grandeur. He should know that all things are existing due to Krishna's entering them as the Super Soul. From Brahma, the most gigantic entity, on down to the smallest ant, all are existing because the Lord has entered each and all and is sustaining them. There is a mission that propounds that regularly propounds that worship of any demigod will lead to the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the Supreme Goal. But worship of the demigods is thoroughly discouraged herein because even the greatest demigods like Brahma and Shiva represent only part of the opulence of the Supreme Lord. He is origin of everyone born and no one is greater than Him. He is Asamaurdhva, which means that no one is superior to Him and that no one is equal to Him. In the Padma Puran, it is stated that one who considers the Supreme Lord Krishna in the same category with demigods, be they be even Brahma or Shiva, becomes at once an atheist. If, however, one thoroughly studies the different descriptions of the opulences and expansions of Krishna's energy, then one can understand without any doubt the position of Lord Sri Krishna and can fix his mind in the worship of Krishna without deviation. The Lord is all-pervading by the expansion of His partial representation and the Super Soul who enters into everything that is. Pure devotees therefore concentrate their minds in Krishna consciousness in full devotional service. Therefore, they are always situated in transcendental position. Devotional service and worship of Krishna are very clearly indicated in this chapter in the verses 8 through 11. That is the way of pure devotional service. How can one attain the highest devotional perfection of association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been thoroughly explained in this chapter. Srila Baldev Vidyabhushan, a great acharya in the disciplic succession from Krishna, concludes his commentary on this chapter by saying, Yachakti leshat suradya bhavanti atyugra tejasaha yadamshena dhritam vishvam sakrishno dashamerchate. From Lord Krishna's potent energy, even the powerful sun gets its power, and by Krishna's partial expansion, the whole world is maintained. Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna is worshipable. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 10th chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of opulence of the Absolute. So Prabhupada clearly says that don't try to understand that how, you know, all these opulent and grand things are existing in the world. Just understand that Krishna is there, is sustaining them and maintaining them. And in the 15th chapter when we go, we'll read that if Krishna is not holding the planets together, the planets would just scatter like a fistful of dust. You know, you have a fistful of dust and if you just leave them, it will just scatter. Similarly, Krishna, without His holding power, it won't. So Krishna is pervading just by His amsha, by His splendor. And the acharyas write, He is Paramatma. Here when He talks about His my amsha, or just because of my amsha, the whole world is maintaining. It's because I am as Paramatma, I am entering into this whole world and the planet and sustaining everything. So if we take a look around and when we see, wow, this is being sustained by Krishna. Otherwise it wouldn't. You had a Mayapur Bihari Prabhu had a doubt? No. Okay. Yes.
I like the emphasis again in this purport that even though all of these vibhuti manifestations of Krishna, we can say, oh, you know, the shark is Krishna, the banyan tree is Krishna, but it's because it's a representation, because it's the best of its category, the most powerful, or it has some opulence or something, But so Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that there is a mission that says, you know, worship any demigod, and that's the same as worshiping Krishna.
Right.
And that's considered atheism. That's not. That's the exact opposite of this, because Krishna says, everything that's beautiful and opulent, it comes from a spark of my splendor. Even the entire universe is just a tiny fragment of my opulence. So,
nice.
Therefore, you know, he's rejecting that kind of pantheism that everything is really Krishna. What he's saying is that it's all Krishna because it comes from Krishna, and he's the source of everything. To really understand it is to understand its relationship with Krishna.
Nice, wonderful, wonderful point. Thank you, Prabhuji. Yes, Sri Govindadatta Prabhu had a point.
In the last verse, Krishna summarizes that whatever beautiful, opulent, and glorious things are there, those are coming from Krishna. So I was just wondering, like, what about the things which are not glorious, or which are like we have like fear and like not so like weakness or something? So, but some places Krishna tells like all whatever exists in three modes of material nature comes from him. And so how we should take that? And also, like, one place Krishna says, like, rag dvesha mukta, so we should not be attracted or repelled by those things. So what is the right approach to, like, understand?
Well, there are two questions. The first question is, if things are not glorious, well, don't they come from Krishna? Is that what was your first question? Well, the whole chapter here is that if you see something glorious, then you remind of Krishna. It's a more positive aspect rather than the negative. Krishna is not saying if something is not glorious, then they are not coming from me, or you have to detest them. Or neither, if you have something glorious or splendorous, you get attracted to them from a material perspective. It's just that they help you remind of me. And how can you think of Krishna within this material world? That was the point of this theme of this chapter, rather. And the second thing is, I didn't get your second question. Raga dvesha vimukta is to, what was the...
So, like, again, repelling from, like, negative... So, the question, like, is there any negative thing at all? Like, because everything is coming from Krishna, so everything is positive.
Yeah, there is positive. It is just like, if you see a tree, there are plants outside, do you think of Krishna, or do you see it as a plant? There are so many trees around. Mostly plant. But if you read this chapter and you see a banyan tree, then the same seeing of a banyan tree actually reminds you of Krishna. If you go, how many swimming pools are there in so many people's houses? You don't see a swimming pool and think of Krishna. Go to the ocean. Oh, Krishna says, I am the ocean. So it is somehow, it's helping you to think of Krishna within this material world. That is the goal.
So even the negative things can help to think of Krishna. Like if the shadow is there, is an absence of light or something.
Well, Srila Shukdev Goswami, he, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when he describes the autumn season, he sees everything and he gives a philosophical meaning to seeing everything in that light. So if we are on the level of philosopher like Shukdev Goswami, you can see everything Krishna. Yovam pashyati sarvatra. Sarvam te mai pashyate. So if you are on that platform, you can see everything as Krishna. But for those who are not, then Krishna is giving his opulences so that you can see. Thank you. Mike, sorry. I've been ordered to. And I'm asking you.
So I was saying, even in this chapter, he talks about gambling of cheats, which is not a glorious thing.
Correct. It's not the same thing, right? It's negative. Yes, Mataji.
When Krishna is revealing his universal form to Arjuna, part of what Arjuna is describing is seeing the horrible.
Right.
That aspect of Krishna, the terrible aspect. Right. Yeah.
He's
born of motive ignorance.
Nice point. To add to that point, he was shaken up. Arjuna was overwrought, shaken up. I don't want to see this form anymore. It's so ghastly. Prasad, you also had a question, right? Yeah, go ahead, Prasad Prabhu, you first, and then Mayapur Bihari Prabhu, in that order. Or whoever you want to, I mean, it's fine.
So, Prabhuji, where does the tendency to, you know, worship these opulences come from? Because in India, a lot of people, you know, they worship the banyan tree and all these opulences. That pantheism thing, where does that come from?
Well... usually it is mainly from family traditions and from some misinterpretation of scriptures. But if you worship, Srila Prabhupada was asked the same thing, that once a devotee came and he said, oh, Prabhupada, that person worships Lord Shiva. And you know, it's so he's like, you know, unfit and all that. And then Prabhupada said, that's okay, we will let him worship Lord Shiva. But if you worship Lord Shiva as a servant of Krishna, that worship is all right. So in the same time, any sort of worship, if it is in relationship with Krishna, seeing Krishna as the center, then that's all right. But if you just see a banyan tree and worship banyan tree, thinking it as God, then again we had the exact same point. Like, you know, you worship a banyan tree, you go back to Godhead. Because banyan tree is Krishna, Krishna is banyan tree. So see the difference in the perception. We can't literally take it and worship. Again, engaging in gambling, thinking it's devotional service, is exactly opposite of what it is. But if you take it literally, then you will do that. Why am I bhakta, Krishna bhakta? What do? I gamble. Because Krishna says I'm gambling. So it's a wrong interpretation of taking that. That's what is being discouraged. And Dr. Nath Prabhu had a comment. Mayapur Bihar Prabhu, after you, okay.
I was just noticing that the tendency toward religion in human society, that it's there, that we want to see something bigger than ourselves even.
Right.
So we may have the, you know, the clan of cave bear or something like that. Right. The people, they worship the bear or the shark or some totem, you know, of our tribe.
Right.
He will come and protect us. He's our ancestor, the great ostrich or whatever. And but this is a tendency, at least it's better than to just be complete,
right.
You know, think that there's nothing great in the world and everything is just meaningless and, you know, at least it shows there's some. So then this is the beginning of development of sense of understanding Krishna, that there's something that inspires awe in us. We see, you know, lightning, fire on the mountain, a volcano, you know, whatever, and it reminds us there's something great and powerful.
Right.
And that's the beginning of awakening, of understanding that behind all that there's something even greater, most powerful, is Krishna.
Nice.
But if you just stay in the platform of, you know, the shark is our tribe
right.
totem, then you don't get transcendental realization.
Wonderful.
You know?
Thank you so much. Mayapur Bihari Prabhu.
Prabhuji, just a small, based on what Prabhuji mentioned, Govindat Prabhu. And I was thinking that, you know, the not so opulent thing, or supposedly not so opulent thing like death, you know, at least for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people, become more sober and think about Krishna much more, at least for those 10 minutes during crematorium. What are we doing? And, you know, what is this? Vis-a-vis, you know, when I see something very opulent, grand, you know, some big, you know, motel or restaurant and, you know, lights and cars, and one may be drifted into the material world, you know. So
nice point. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, like, I agree. Krishna says, Mrityu Sarvaharas Chaham. There is nothing opulent about death. But it's power. And there is some power that represents Krishna. Yes, Jagrini Mataji.
I think that's where the reading this comes in.
Right.
Because I guarantee for everyone here that now when you look at those things, you're not going to just think of that. It's part of what goes on by reading this, and that's why Krishna is saying that. Because why else? Krishna is saying that, and then he's saying to Arjuna, well, but why do you need to know this?
Right.
Well, then why did Krishna just say all that?
Right?
But him saying it, and it coming to us through Srila Prabhupada in these books, now when we go and we see gambling, we're going to think of Krishna. If we, you know, we're going to, the more we hear this and see this and read this, the more we'll be remembering Krishna, even in unusual circumstances.
True. True. Nice point. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
So I had a question about a couple of statements that are made in the purport.
Oh, the final verse?
Yes.
Okay.
One of them is, pure devotees, therefore, concentrate their minds in Krishna consciousness in full devotional service. Therefore, they are always situated in the transcendental position. There are two key terms here. One is pure devotees. and the other is full devotional service. Is it being implied here in a recommendation that pure devotees who are engaged in the highest worship then are not really into this pantheism thing? They are worshiping in full consciousness, in full devotional service. Are we to interpret then that they are worshiping the Bhagwan personality of the Lord, which is there in its full opulences? And would then there be the highest form of devotional service? Because there is a reference to pure devotees.
Right. So Srila Prabhupada, when he summarizes this, he says in relation to the Chatushloki verses of Bhagavatam, and those are like a subset of the verses in the 10th chapter, wherein the activities of the pure devotees are talked about. Text 8, 9, and 10. Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada, when he summarizes, he talks about that pure devotees for those four verses. Their whole activity is to serve Krishna, and then they are situated in a transcendental position because their whole life is that. Srinvatam, they're just chanting and hearing about Krishna. Of course, we need to get there. I mean, again, it's not something that's going to happen overnight. Adho Shraddha, Tadho Sadhu Sangha. But eventually, when we get there, that's all they do. And that's all they get happiness from. That's all they get satisfaction from. It's full consciousness and full devotion service. And they don't have to worry about, you know, how gambling is Krishna. They are just purely focused on Shyamsundar, who's holding a flute in his hand, who's playing in Vrindavan, who's playing with the gopis. That's all they are concerned about. Till that time, and Srila Prabhupada also mentions in the purport that Krishna, Arjuna asks this question. Because this is another interesting thing. He says, "Oh Lord, para Brahma, Param Dhamma, you are the supreme, I got you everything, you know, you are the absolute truth, blah, blah, blah." And then he says, "Tell me more about your opulences so that I can know about you, I can think about you." Prabhupada says, why did Arjuna ask when he already accepted Krishna as Bhagavan? Because for the common man to understand. So that's another aspect to this, why Arjuna asked after praising the Lord as the Supreme Pure. That's another thing in the purport.
Yes, so there the implication would be that once Krishna reveals all his opulences, he's full in all his opulences, that one would then be convinced or come to the position that he's the greatest and I ought to worship him. There is also a reference to
that
in this purport.
Absolutely.
That there is some type of a justification or a rationale that follows.
Which the rationale and the justification exactly comes from what Akrunathru was saying, that even in any like aborigine or any primitive society, they have a tendency to worship something greater than themselves. And when they see these opulences, then slowly they kind of understand that, you know, there is higher power. So that's very nicely ties up into what Akrunathru said. Yes, Prashastra. That's the last comment because we are out of time.
Prabhuji, this is just a fundamental question not related to this chapter. So you just mentioned that Arjuna was, you know, asking these questions on behalf of the common man. So, I mean, this thing has been told even in other chapters that, you know, Arjuna had accepted him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but just for the sake of common man. So on the battlefield, did Arjuna know that Sanjaya is watching them, and did Arjuna forecast that whatever has been spoken by Lord Krishna will be told to the common man in the form of Bhagavad Gita in the future generation?
So your question is, did Arjuna know that whatever he spoke will be written down?
Did
Arjuna know he was on a webcam or not?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Copyrights and we don't know. Honestly, there is no mention in Prabhupada's books. But Krishna's activities are transcendental, and Veda Vyas is his, as we read in the 10th chapter, amongst the sages, I am Vyas. So he, Vyas being an incarnation of Krishna, wrote whatever was needed for the common man, because they were engaged in... Yes?
I was just thinking, I just asked Arjuna, because I'm so bad at this stuff, but Arjuna, did he know that Krishna Arjuna is eternal. He is Arjuna. You don't become Arjuna, right? Is that right? Okay. So knowing that, I would say, yes, Arjuna did know, because these pastimes are repeated. Mm. So Krishna is having Bhagavad Gita
discourse with Arjuna more than once, and I'm sure Arjuna knows what's...
But Krishna says that he remembers all of his birth, but Arjuna doesn't remember.
Hey, we are keeping out of this. It's among the affiliated with Prabhupada's disciples.
Can I just say one other
yes,
thing,
please.
Real quick?
No,
about,
go ahead,
it was about what Rakshit asked before about pure devotees.
Right.
In ISKCON, since I grew up as a teenager in this movement, we can see around us pure devotees. It doesn't have to be that there's other devotees that on the level of Srila Prabhupada. It doesn't mean that you're like Srila Prabhupada to be a pure devotee. And we can see around us just by our participation in this process, our dedication to this process, how the desires of the world fall away. Right. And all we really like to do and care about is things about Krishna consciousness. And many of the devotees, they'll go through their lives doing their duties, but the things that they're enjoying is the discussions about Krishna and the... So the pure devotees are among us. Just it's not something that, like, you know, one day, many lifetimes from now, once we get this big realization of all of Krishna's opulence, then we can start... Yeah. No, it's happening right here and now, right. All around us.
Right. Thank you. Just quick comment before I go ahead. We are very, very grateful to Jagarini Mataji for kindly joining us in the third semester and helping and enlightening us. So it's we are grateful. Thank you, Mataji. Somebody had a question. I forgot. Yes, Rakshit Prabhu.
Of pure devotees and devotional service, then it also brings up what devotional service is. And I think that it would be relevant to say that when one is talking about full devotional service, they are talking about the 9 processes of devotional service that devotees are practicing, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, all of that. And so their activities... They may not be chanting all the time, but their activities are revolving around these 9 processes, where they are doing one or the other in the practice of devotional service.
Well, I beg to slightly differ because of the simple fact that is true. The 9 processes of devotional service is the means. Srila Prabhupada... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was talking to Sanatan Goswami, and he says devotional service to Krishna is the best. And amongst the devotional service, the 9 processes of devotional service are the best. Amongst those 9 processes of devotional service, chanting the holy name of Krishna is the best, because if one offenselessly chants the holy name of Krishna, then one gets a goal of life, which is Krishna prema. So that is Mahaprabhu's version, and yes, in the progression, what you said is true. And you should also understand that Thakur Haridas, he used to chant all day long. We can't be on that level, but it was enough. And Mahaprabhu was supremely satisfied by his chanting endeavor. And Srila Prabhupada also mentions in Isopanishad that if you achieve perfection in any one of the processes of devotional service, then you have achieved perfection. So 9 is good, 1 is good, devotional service is all good, in whatever way. 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 1. 1, at least 1. Any other comments? I wish to thank you all for taking your valuable time and coming here and giving me a chance to serve you. So we'll meet in about 3 weeks' time. We'll try to complete the 11th, complete this whole... It's the beauty of this. Not the beauty, whatever. We cannot achieve with your blessings. So the purports are short. In Prabhupada's purports are not very large or very, very So it should be 3 weeks should be good enough time. So we take 2 verses a day. Yeah, 21 days, 2 verses a day, 42 verses, we are done. Please submit the homework on time. And the date is also there in the schedule. For those who got the schedule, they have the time due for the homework is also there. Yes, thank you, Mataji. And it's homework is also really short. It's not big, but yes, you had a smile. You have a comment. Is Rakshit Prabhu, how are we doing on time? We are okay. A few more minutes. You can give us a few more minutes, or how is it?
We are fine. We are just waiting for the speaker to appear. Okay. So there is transition time, and continue discussion. Till then, after which we'll take a break, and then the speaker comes.
Yes, Jagrini Masiji had.
Can I say one other thing about what I said just a minute ago?
Yeah.
Rakshit Prabhu, about when I say that there's pure devotees among us, when someone is on the path to becoming a pure devotee, they're going to be doing everything their guru has asked them to do. Like we take example from Srila Prabhupada. He did everything asked of him by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and he in fact took no credit for anything that he did.
Right.
It was all coming from his Guru Maharaj. And I think that as we progress in our devotional service, one of the symptoms of pure devotional service would be that we would be also exhibiting gratitude to our Guru Maharaj, and certainly chanting the prescribed number of rounds, and you know, we're not going to just do our own thing and become pure devotees. It's there's something that happens when you surrender to a spiritual master. There's and the hesitancy to do so is something that you're holding on, that you're not wanting to surrender. That's
right.
And that's although some of that is a good thing. You don't want to give that easily and be cheated, but there comes a point where it's necessary to progress in spiritual life, to get help in spiritual life.
Nice
and
point.
And that would be one of the symptoms of pure devotional service.
Wonderful. Thank you. So thank you so much. I think we'll stop here and you can take a break, or because the next session. Thank you. Vanchakalpatarubhyas shakrata.